on 1,000 planets and spreading out.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
To the Batmobile.
May the force be with you.
Who is that masked man?
Avengers, assemble.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Fantastic Forum. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell, and for the next hour, we are going to excite, entertain, elucidate, and educate you with news, information, exciting discussion, interviews, all sorts of wonderful, fun, and interesting stuff. This is Fantastic Forum. It's a geek world, and you're just living in it. That's if you're a mundane. If you happen to be one of us, then this is a wonderful golden age of geeks in which you are living now. And it's something really special, and I am terribly excited to be a part of it. And I'm terribly excited that you have tuned in to be a part of the show today. So, we are talking Black Panther on today's show. Of course, Black Panther is the latest, the greatest movie from Marvel, and it opened just yesterday. Well, it actually opened on Thursday, and it's taking the world by storm. I mean, you've never seen anything like all of this. Anyway, so what we're going to do, we have the official FF review that we are going to play. As much as I want to get to some news and information, I'm kind of overwhelmed because I'm feeling like, oh, we need to just get to this review and get going with it. So, but I have some wonderful guests, and we're going to be talking about Black Panther. We've got Nate Moore, who is the executive producer. I talked to him a few days ago. Also, Ruthie Carter, who is the costume designer. And I talked to her, too. So we're going to have some clips from that particular interview. And then me and my panelists are just going to go nuts here. So there could be spoilers. So just watch out. In any case, here is the official FF review of Black Panther, and then we'll be back with the rest of the show after that. Ulysses Campbell for Fantastic Forum. I've been a fan of the Black Panther for many years. When I was growing up, the vast majority of superheroes were Caucasian. The Panther was the first black superhero from a major comics publisher. Created by comics titans Stan the Man Lee and Jack King Kirby, the character debuted in April of 1966 in Fantastic Four number 52. And the guy was a total badass. A wealthy African king as well as a scientific genius, he single-handedly defeated Marvel's premier superhero team. Joining the Avengers in 1968, he continued to make appearances in other series, but it wasn't until 1973 when the character gained his own feature and began to come into his own. Jungle Action No. 6 began what I consider to be the definitive Black Panther storyline. Written by Don McGregor and illustrated by Rich Buckler, Gil Kane, and Billy Graham. And it is from this story arc that much of the new movie is drawn. The film is magnificent. It is an excellent depiction of the Afrofuturism genre and a welcome departure from the established formula that has been reinforced by recent Marvel Cinematic Universe entries. Black Panther is a groundbreaking movie that will hopefully set a new trend in the imitative Hollywood climate. Director Ryan Coogler, who co-wrote the screenplay with Joe Robert Cole, was a perfect choice for this material, and it's a wonderful creative vehicle for him to highlight his tremendous talent. Chadwick Boseman reprises the role of T'Challa, the Black Panther, as the character ascends to the throne of Wakanda following the death of his father, played by John Kane, in Captain America: Civil War. Boseman is an established talent after such films as 42 and Get On Up. His portrayal of T'Challa is no exception. Fittingly, the film boasts a predominantly African-American cast, and each and every one of the performers is outstanding. Danai Gurira, Lupita Nyong'o, and Letitia Wright continue the recent trend of prominent female characters in genre movies. They are joined by Andy Serkis, Forrest Whitaker, Martin Freeman, Daniel Kaluuya, Winston Duke, and Sterling K. Brown. Particularly worthy of note was Michael B. Jordan as antagonist Eric Killmonger. Jordan has the distinction of having worked with director Coogler on his previous films, Fruitvale Station and Creed. Coogler seems to coax exceptional performances from Jordan, and he does so once again here. Jordan's Killmonger is a complex and engaging character who very nearly steals this movie. Black Panther is a great example of Marvel's world-building, and it takes the audience to a heretofore unseen area of the Marvel Universe. Now, I mentioned the Afrofuturist genre earlier. Those of you who haven't heard the term or are unfamiliar with it will want to head for Google, because it perfectly describes the framework for this movie. The African nation of Wakanda is hidden from most of the world. Believed to be a poor third world country whose economy is agrarian, it is in actuality a technologically advanced paradise. What makes Wakanda unique is the presence of vibranium, an extraterrestrial supermetal found nowhere else on Earth. The film follows T'Challa as he fends off challenges, wrestles with his new role as king, and struggles to identify the place of Wakanda among the other nations of the world. As audiences have come to expect from Marvel, this movie is top shelf in every way. With a production budget reportedly in excess of $200 million, no expense has been spared. In addition to the usual great visual effects, Hannah Beechler's production design and the costumes by Hollywood veteran and twice Academy Award nominated Ruth E. Carter are particularly outstanding. Music fans are in for an additional treat with the movie soundtrack from rap star Kendrick Lamar, whose work accentuates the musical score of Ludwig Göransson. One complaint I've had with recent sci-fi and superhero movies is their length, and I understand that the director's cut for this movie was about 4 hours long. The 2-hour, 14-minute runtime doesn't seem excessive here, and I'm actually looking forward to watching the director's cut one of these days. Another complaint I've had is with regard to the relative suitability of these genre movies for younger viewers. With a PG-13 rating, you may take children to see this movie without reservation. The action never gets bloody or overly graphic, and there is no overt sexuality. I particularly recommend the film for black children. I think it's a good idea for them to see a superhero that looks like them, and I think the Black Panther is a wonderful role model. And you don't have to be black to enjoy this movie. I expect that audiences of all cultures will find something exciting and even thought-provoking here. Black Panther is a triumph for Marvel Studios, director Ryan Coogler, and black culture in Afrofuturism. The relatively few shortcomings are by far exceeded by its many strengths. The best representation I've seen of the black superhero and one of the best superhero movies of all time. 4 out of 4 stars.
All right, so there you have it, the official Fantastic Forum review of Black Panther, which opened nationwide yesterday. So, of course, this is WERA 96.7 FM in Arlington, and some of you may be streaming the show via the website at WERA.FM. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by my extra special guests, Shireen Nicole, Brian Lyles, and Brandon Troy. So welcome to the show, guys.
What's up?
There we go. Okay. So, of course, we have all seen the movie now. Oh, and I should warn listeners, there may be spoilers as a part of this conversation. So, yeah. And I know some of you are probably tuned in because you know that there are going to be snippets from this interview with Nate Moore, who is the executive producer of this movie, and Ruth E. Carter. In fact, both Shireen and I were fortunate enough to speak with them last weekend separately, and I have not heard any of Shireen's interview, and she hadn't heard any of mine, so hopefully we didn't cross anything. Of course, you won't hear hers here. In fact, Shireen, where can listeners go to hear your interview with these wonderful creative professionals?
They can go to idobi.com, Adobe Radio, and click on podcast and go to Geek Girl Riot, and it will be the most recent podcast. And you will hear a lot of giggling between me and Nate and Ruth and Philip.
There was a lot of laughter, and I generally think that it's a wonderful thing. All right, so now I don't necessarily want to lead with negativity. However, I'm going to lead with just a little bit of negativity. And it may not be what you think, because I promised my wife that, well, I didn't promise my wife, but I had told her, because the movie wasn't perfect, okay? It wasn't perfect. I thought that, the good stuff about it by far outweighed the bad. However, there seems to be a very determined segment of the community that is interested in deriding this movie and dragging it down. In fact, I understand that on social media, there are these quite likely Russian trolls. I don't know what kind of trolls they are. I suspect they're Russian or white supremacist trolls or something. But they're starting to post these fake pictures. I mean, the pictures may be real, you know, of women who have been beaten. And they are claiming that African-Americans did this at showings of the Black Panther, as if white folks showed up and black people were like, "This movie ain't for you."
That didn't happen, white people. We want your money.
What Shireen said, that is absolutely right. Wow. But why do we think that this kind of thing is happening? Shireen?
Well, I think that Public Enemy said it well back in the day when they made an album called Fear of a Black Planet. That was a joke.
Okay.
That was a joke. No, I think that people are always, you know, what Black Panther really does is levels the playing field to a certain degree. No, it doesn't. It's making the first forays into leveling the playing field. And a lot of people are afraid to have black heroes because they're afraid they'll be displaced. And that's sad, because none of us are looking to displace everyone. We're all just looking to share images of ourselves and to tell our stories.
Brandon, what do you think?
I think you said it perfectly, Shireen. It just goes back to the idea, and I'm going to throw in like a whole other like Marvel entity, the X-Men, you know, that whole idea of change, you know, that concept that people fear change, and just making sure that there is a just like you were saying, Shireen, an equal playing field out there, and making sure that there is not any manner of trying to displace anyone, but just to, you know, show that there are positive images out there, you know, among, you know, all racial lines, among all folks, not just, you know, particular people. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Hey, and Brian, what do you have to say on this?
Yep. I kind of agree on everybody. They pretty much it's an image thing. Like last year with Wonder Woman, it was about I wouldn't say feminism. It was just about empowering women with an image of an iconic hero. And with Black Panther, it's pretty much the same thing. Mind you, it took you this long to finally do it, but I'm very appreciative of it. Of seeing that image, because mind you, this is the third Marvel live action adaptation of a black character, and the other two were, I wouldn't say street thugs, but just the simple fact that, you know, they're from the streets and the hood, and here we have an African king, and a lot I can understand where a lot of people are appreciative of seeing someone not just of African descent but of kingship to be featured in a movie theater like this. So it's a big thing, which I understand for a lot of people to enjoy.
And I'm sorry, can I add to that really quick?
Sure.
And then just the idea in not to have, you know, characters of color that are or African American that are in the periphery, that are not like sidekicks, that they are, you know, they are leaders themselves, and they're not, you know, privy to another character.
Mm-hmm. No, and I appreciate that. And, you know, particularly, Brian, what you said about, you know, because there's nothing wrong with urban settings, and that is typically the way that African-American characters, especially African-American superheroes, are portrayed, i.e. Black Lightning, you know, recently on the CW. But this is a little bit different. Now, I'm going to play the first cut from the interview with Nate Moore and Ruth E. Carter. Now, I do have to say that it was a roundtable interview that I conducted. Also present were film critic Tim Gordon and Lauren Cash from the Rogers Review. But I have led with my own questions that they answered. So this is Nate Moore talking about his role in actually hiring Ryan Coogler.
Joe Robert Cole, who's the creator of the film, was part of the Marvel Writers Program. And one day we said, we should go see a movie after work and have dinner afterwards. So we bought tickets for a movie. We went in there. The movie was Fruitvale Station. The dinner was terrible because we were both so emotionally shattered from what we'd just seen that we couldn't recover and have a real conversation. So it was clear there was a filmmaker at work who was very impactful. Cut to Creed, the trailer drops, and you're sort of like, you know, a Rocky movie, a spinoff probably should be kind of bad, I thought. But that trailer was so good, I was like, oh, who directed that? Wait a second, it's the same guy who did Fruitvale Station? So I was actually in Atlanta shooting, finishing up Civil War, and Ryan was in Atlanta finishing up Creed, doing some reshoots. And I got him on the phone and talked to him and realized he was a fan, which was good. But I think he was sort of rightly kind of hesitant to get in bed with a company as big as Marvel, right? Because he's coming off of Fruitvale, which is a small movie, and Creed, which even at $30 million was sort of a much smaller film than what this could be. And I think he was a little apprehensive because Marvel at the time and still kind of has a reputation of being a bit tough on filmmakers. But in meeting him for the first time, what we realized is we liked the same things about T'Challa and we liked the same things about Wakanda. And when I talked him through the sort of even the 10,000 feet pitch of what we thought the movie could be, he got really interested. And then when he came in and pitched all of the detail and nuance that would end up in the film that was very personal to him, we got super interested. And I think that meeting sort of cemented it because he realized we weren't going to try and put him in the box of what we thought the movie should be. We just wanted to make a good movie. And that we would be very supportive in helping him execute his vision in the best way we knew how. So I think we were fortunate because I don't know a lot of filmmakers who would have found a way to make the film as emotional yet as resonant as he has. And that's a testament to him as a director.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Ryan Coogler did an outstanding job with this picture. I mean, I can't say enough about him. Shireen, you had mentioned, because we were talking, in fact, I believe it was before the screening, the preview screening that we saw the weekend before we conducted these interviews. And I had mentioned that Ava DuVernay had pecked, because Marvel, they were talking to, like, if you were black and had a pulse, they were talking to you, as far as, just looking around for directors. And I had mentioned to Shireen that Ava DuVernay had passed on this film. And Shireen, do you remember that particular exchange and what you said?
I do not. But I do know that Ava DuVernay passed on it, and I felt like she passed on it because it's not her aesthetic. You know, she's got Wrinkle in Time coming up, which fits what she does a lot better, and I admire that a lot. Like, I admire people who say, okay, I'm not going to make the best Black Panther film, but you know who might? Ryan Coogler.
Well, and you said basically that, so I appreciate, you know, that your knee jerk on that, you know, is what it is. And to pivot back to that, because we were talking about Black Lightning, too. I have finally watched the premiere of Black Lightning just because, it was all right. I mean, look, when Shireen, do you remember what you said about Black Lightning?
I do not.
Likely
unchanged.
Okay. What well, no. It's just because Brian sort of touched on it when he mentioned, you know, the whole urban crime and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, you said you were tired of seeing that, you know, and I'm like,
yeah. I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that as much as I admire the Akills for what they've done with Black Lightning, I feel like it leans a little bit too heavily in the territory of Luke Cage. And I felt like this was an opportunity to give us something else, especially with Jefferson Pierce at the head of a high school. Like, we had this opportunity to show a fuller range of who we are, and we didn't quite take it with Black Lightning. Although it's a great show and I enjoy it and the characters are great, but you know, we need to spread out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Black Panther does a wonderful job of that too. Okay, so who wanted to say something? Okay, all right. Only because I've got a number of these clips, we're gonna play another one. This is because Nate Moore was also a fan of the Black Panther. He was a huge fan, in fact, as per this next clip.
Honestly, it's pretty surreal. When I was a kid, like, I grew up with not a lot of money, and you go to the comic store, and those things become an escape, right? And to find characters like Black Panther and Falcon and Storm and later Bishop and these characters that were reflective of me was really powerful in a way that I didn't quite know how to articulate. You just knew that for some reason those were the ones I kept kind of trying to find out more about. As a teenager, I grew up right when Wesley Snipes' Blade was made and the first X-Men was made. And you're like, oh, wait, these can be movies and be taken seriously? This can't last. You know, it felt like a fad. And I didn't even know what it meant to be a filmmaker, frankly. So I sort of didn't really have a plan. I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do. But when I came to Marvel about 8 years ago, Black Panther was the first thing I asked about. Because Nick Fury existed, and that was cool. Again, Falcon to me was always cool, but in the context of Captain America. But he was a character who was his own mythology. And the world of Wakanda was so rich, and he was so interesting that I knew there was a really good movie there. But at the time, we didn't really know how to make it. The great news was that Kevin Feige also was like, yeah, we love that character. Let's figure out how to do something about it. But in trying to craft a story pre-Civil War, we fell into the trap of making an origin movie. And that movie was not that interesting because you always have to get past the part where before he's the Black Panther and learning about it. And it wasn't until we were doing Civil War and we realized we needed a third party between Cap and Iron Man. And that's, I sort of saw this opportunity. I was like, oh, what, guys, what about Black Panther? And again, luckily Kevin was like, that's a great idea. And Joe and Anthony were like, sure, another cool character, let's do it. But there was never a grand plan. It always just seemed like things seemed to work out in a way that, that helped me get to this point. And now that the movie's coming out, you know, we worked so hard on this film and shooting was tough and pre-production was tough just because of the amount of detail. So you don't really have time to stop and go like, oh man, we're actually doing it. You're just trying to get through the day and make sure you're getting all the footage you can. But it is really cool to think about if my 7-year-old self could see myself today, how cool would that be to go like, hey, you know that book that you just pulled out of there? One day that's going to be on the big screen and I can be involved in it. It's pretty special.
You know, and this is one of the things that I love about these comic book movies and the fact that Marvel is doing their own thing. They do it right. That was one of the things that I thought from that first Iron Man movie back in 2007, you know, when that came out. You know, it was essentially an indie picture, and it was the people who knew the character best depicting the character. You know, now I want to something that Nate said in that last clip. He mentioned the element of the Black Panther being his own mythology, and so I wanted to ask Brandon, because I know you know, you're a fan of this character, you're a fan of the genre, and you go to a lot of different events. You know, and you know, I'm sure you've seen people, and you know, you sort of gauge reactions and stuff. But you know, this business about the Black Panther being his own mythology, what do you think about that?
You know, I definitely agree with that, because just like with this film, and I know we're going to get into more details about it as we continue, but it was a self-contained story. A lot of times with a lot of the Marvel films, and don't get me wrong, I love a lot of them, while there have been a couple of missteps, is that a couple of them have been relying upon the universe at large and saying, oh, you know, here's this character. No, this character is making an appearance. And it wasn't, you know, like that. It was a self-contained thing, which I appreciated, you know, from that film, which is like from this film.
Hmm. You know, and that's interesting, too, because now that you mention it, this is the first Marvel film in a while where they haven't taken the opportunity to introduce
another character. I mean, you did get to see, and people stay in your seats through the end of the credits because you think you've seen all the movie and you have not seen all the movie. Although I my wife, not knowing anything about these characters, she saw Bucky and she thought that this was Claw that they had somehow reconstituted. And I was like, oh wait, oh that's right, he's missing an arm. Hey, nah, baby, this somebody else. You got to see the other movie.
That would have been awesome.
but this is the first movie where they haven't taken, you know, they haven't used it to introduce, here's Stingray hanging around, or, oh, wow, wait, what? You know, here's somebody, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know who else they could have stuck in to Black Panther, quite frankly. He is really his own thing. But the other part of this is, during the second preview screening that Shireen and I saw, there was a guy with the root, okay? And I'm not going to mention his name because he probably hasn't mentioned my name in his thing. But I will say he's from the root. And we got into a slight disagreement because I personally feel that the definitive comic book arc for the Black Panther was Don McGregor and Billy Graham's Panther's Rage, which was back in 73 through 75 in the old Jungle Action stories. And this gentleman was enamored of Christopher Priest's run. Now, of course, you've had a lot of great comic book people. You've had Reggie Hudlin. You know, just recently we've had Brian Stelfreeze and Ta-Nehisi Coates. Am I saying his name right? Somebody? Anybody?
As far as we know.
Okay, all right. Because I get scared with that one. But yeah, but so, and all these great people, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and, you know, all kinds of people are contributing. And we're going to have to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I did just sort of want to ask you all, as Shireen pointed out, there was quite a bit of the Christopher Priest run in this. I had said, oh yes, they drew most heavily on Don McGregor's Panther's Rage. But I don't know that was really true, because right? There was a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm gonna mess this up, but that's the way I say it. The Dora Malaysia, yeah, thank you. There you go. That's the way I always read it in the comic book. But yeah, that was from Priest's run. Agent guy. Now I can't think of his name. Colonizer. You know, he was from.
Is his name Ross?
Everett K. Ross. Thank you. Yeah, he's from that run. You know, but of course, Wakabi and. Ramona, who's the Panther's mother. I mean, she was a Don McGregor character. So, you know, I mean, they sort of cherry picked, but it came out right. How did we feel about the representation? Since we're all familiar, some of us more so than others, but we're all familiar with the original comic book source material. How do we feel about that?
I just felt that it was, I wouldn't say cherry pick, but it felt continuous. It felt right, you know, knowing the fact that, you know, Panther and Claw, you know, that was really a main rivalry that, you know, I didn't like how it ended the way it did, but it fit.
Oh, you mean the Claw storyline?
Yeah. And then, but Killmonger and Panther, I mean, I knew full well that that's the main story. So, and seeing that, you know, being visually seen is, I think, it really impacted the story. And I think it, a lot of people, I don't know if you heard, there was like one report saying about the tension, in a sense, between Africans and African Americans was depicted in this storyline. And I felt like it's a little bit, but I understand where they were trying to get with this. So, overall, like I said, I think they picked the right parts and it fit perfectly. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and the fact that the Black Panther is African, I mean, that's significant. You know, I mean, we've had, Blade, who is African American. You know, we've seen Luke Cage now. We've seen the Falcon. You know, all these guys are African American, but this guy is straight up African. And I don't know about y'all, my experience, you know, and not that Africans generally have a
sense of superiority. But, you know, generally what I have gotten from a lot of Africans is, oh, y'all was the weak ones. You know, your ancestors didn't jump off the ships. You know, y'all were in bondage here, you know. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. But look, that musical cue, of course, means that it is time for us to take a very quick break. Because WERA is a community radio station, and we are non-commercial. We rely on the ongoing generosity of our underwriters and our sponsors to maintain the totality of the operation of the radio station. We hope that you consider sponsoring some of the fine programming or underwriting the overall content of the station. But what we're going to do, we're going to pause, and we're going to promote some of the other exceptional shows that are coming up tonight and later this weekend. But stick around, because we've got lots more Fantastic Forum, and it's coming up right after this. Don't go away.
Use the comics to inform me, absolutely. I think that it's important to start with the comics. That's the origin of all of this. But the comics are done with a broad brush. You know, when you look at the background of the people of Wakanda in the comics, you see all the cultures that they're trying to represent. You see some specific things. But what that did for me was it told me that, you know, the field is open. Through the film medium, that we are going to want to see detail. So as much detail as I could bring to the story, the better, because these fans know how to pick it apart. So as much as I infuse something to confuse them or something to intrigue them, all the better. So it was incredibly empowering to be guided by Marvel, because they had such a great knowledge of the comics, and I could always go to them with questions. I didn't feel so much pressure that I had to read every single comic and know every single thing, because I had them to rely on. But at the same time, you know, creating this world was a huge task, and you know, we were all uber focused, you know, on every detail, and we shared so much. You know, at first I thought, wow, am I going to another meeting? Like what? Like, I'm sitting here trying to get something done, people. I got on a production afterwards where there weren't so much, so many meetings, not so many discussions. And I kind of missed it. I was like, hey, we need to talk. Well, let's share. And we really did share on the Black Panther. Yeah. A lot had to do with Nate. A lot had to do with Ryan Coogler, because they were very clear about the aesthetic. And I'd come to the meetings. I had books. I had information. I had sketches, so that we could all just kind of collectively just add to the pie. I did feel the pressure, but like I said, I had incredibly supportive team members. You know, Hannah would come by and visit, and she'd say, I just want to see what you're doing for this. I'm like, okay, come over here. Let's look at this. And she's like, oh my God, that's perfect. So we supported each other. If you had a question, I know that one of my questions for Ryan was the Border Tribe Elder, how his blanket should look. It was written in the script that it's this glorious blanket, and I kept wanting to like throw things on it, you know, do what the Ghanaians do with gold or do some beadwork. And he said, maybe just one beautiful color, just one beautiful blanket. And he was so right. So that kind of support I remember getting a call from Victoria Alonso, and she said, you know, no one, this is your movie, and no one's going to take it away from you. So when you hear things like that as you are dying and crying and struggling and and creating, and then someone says that to you, it just picks you right back up. And I'm honored that people have responded to the costumes in the way that they have.
Yeah, not just the costumes, but the whole movie, the way that people have responded to this movie. I mean, it's all right. So on Thursday, the estimates were about $25 million. It took in around another $50 million. I haven't seen an actual figure. I was looking earlier. But the movie in two days, it's made like $75 million. I mean, I think in the advance sales
$75 million is just Friday.
I thought they said it was 50 because it was 75 gross is the figure I saw. But I'm not going to argue with it. It's made a whole bunch of money. Let's just say that, you know. All right. Now, we haven't talked about the film really hardly at all, okay? I would like for each of you to tell me what your favorite moment in this film was. Now, do any of you have something picked out that stands out for you at this instant? Because if you don't, I can tell you what one of my favorite moments was, and then I'll pivot to one of you. But one of you knows, and you don't have to say, well, let me, who knows what different.
I mean, I can. All right,
Brandon, come on. Come on with it.
I'm afraid I may end up stealing your thunder. So,
that's okay.
but I would just say the characters themselves, I know we were talking about before that it is a self-contained story, but we did get new characters that, you know, going forward, we may see more of. So, like, Okoye and Shuri, who stole the show, in my opinion. Her sister, the Q, so to speak, of the of Wakanda, stole the movie because she had, like, all the best lines all the, you know, the funny, quippy moments in that brother-sister relationship, which was really enjoyable. Outside of that, I would just say just the relationships themselves. Outside of, you know, maybe Thor, which is why, you know, the character of Loki is so intriguing, is that character of Killmonger and how deep, you know, that relationship goes with, you know, our protagonist and him having, you know, understandable, like, motivation for why he is the way that he is.
That's an excellent point. All right, you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm talking today with Shireen Nicole, Brian Lyles, Brandon Troy, and we are talking about Black Panther, the new movie that just opened from Marvel Studios. We also have some clips from an interview that I was able to conduct last weekend with executive producer Nate Moore and costume designer Ruth E. Carter. So also, the music is a strength of this movie. There is a curated soundtrack from Kendrick Lamar, and playing in the background even now is Ludwig Göransson's score to the movie. But Brian, what's one of your favorite moments from the movie?
Right now, my favorite moment is towards the end, because I had this weird thought in my brain when T'Challa and Nakia were talking, and he's trying to convince her to stay, and she finally sort of, like, gave in a sense, and they end up kissing, and they did this nice little shot towards the big towers of Wakanda City, and thinking in my brain, I'm saying to myself, a storm is coming.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
So I figured the fact is, like, since, again, Fox is now part of the Disney family and they got the X-Men, I am kind of curious of the fact that what happens to Nakia going into Infinity War. I'm kind of curious the fact, will Storm appear in the second Black Panther? Because I one thing is, I did like Nakia. I never thought that, you know, that character, she's that type of woman that, you know, I think is the right person to be with the Black Panther. She's self-defiant. She's very charismatic. And she's loyal, and is not just loyal to her country. She's loyal to anyone that she sees that has a cause, and she knows full well that T'Challa has a cause, a proper cause for Wakanda. So and she I admired that. As for everything else, I felt like, you know, it was, like I said, it was a really good movie, but I have a very, very problematic of why I didn't give it the high scoring as Yuli would, but I will carry on to let Miss Shireen have her say about what she liked.
Okay, before we get to that, we are going to hear another clip. This is Ruth Carter and Nate Moore talking about some of the challenges inherent in making the movie.
Well, the schedule flipped on us, and we were very close to shooting, and all of a sudden, all of the big scenes were up at the front of the schedule. Was that because of Andy Serkis's schedule?
It was.
And so we had planned, you know, we were in a good place. We were feeling mighty strong, and then the schedule flipped. Mm. And so the things that were working out towards the end were now first up. So we had a very short Christmas break.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a million. I think there's a million points at which we were like, "Is this gonna work?"
No, exactly.
That you figure out, you know, and I think, as of, for instance, you know, finding stunt people for the film was hard, not because there aren't talented stunt people, but not in the volume that we needed. Mm. So to populate Wakanda and to find all the Dora Milaje who all had to be able to fight, they didn't exist because their movies hadn't been made enough that there was this pool of people. It's not like I can bring in 100 S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. I could do that with a phone call. Bringing in Wakandans was hard, and so we had to very early on bring people in earlier than we would have so we could train them to become stunt people. Mm. So the Dora were pulled from dancers, from actresses, from athletes, and we trained them to be stunt people because they didn't exist. So cool. Because in a lot of respects, Black Panther was breaking ground in how we wanted to try and do things, we had to figure out how to break ground, and that forces you to be really nimble. And it really pushed a lot of our department heads to be out of their comfort zone. But again, I think the end result was something that's pretty special.
Awesome.
All right. So, Shireen, what is your favorite? Well, what were some of your favorite moments from the film?
No, there's so many favorite moments. First of all, I just have to shout out Danai Gurira for being absolutely amazing as General Okoye. She mm-hmm. had so much nuance and style. And if you pick one of the best hand-to-hand combat scenes, it's her in a red dress in South Korea. Mm-hmm. It's just like amazing. So I've got a shout out to her. And she really gave us this beautiful relationship between her and T'Challa, where she was almost a big sister. And that interplay between her and T'Challa, and then Shuri and T'Challa, really that family bond did great things for me. Everything that Winston Duke did as M'Baku, including kind of barking Ross down when he wanted to speak, and he kind of did that gorilla bark down. It's like it should have been wrong. It should have worried us, and yet it was just so brilliant. His portrayal of that character, and such a flip from who that character is in the comic books.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, I loved, but hands down, it's got to be Michael B. Jordan's performance as Eric Killmonger, a villain whose understanding of the problems of his people were correct, but his solution was very wrong. And he played every bit of that character to make you feel your villain. Mm. So there you go.
Mm. Indeed. I tell you what, I think you are dead on with all of that. And, you know, particularly when it comes to Winston Duke, because when I heard that the man ape was going to be in this movie, I was like, you know, I mean, unlike some characters, unfortunately, if you're not Batman, you know, your rogues gallery is likely to be somewhat problematic in terms of what it is. And, you know, man ape was one of those characters, but, you know, the way that the producers got that character together, because he wasn't, you know, I mean, he was an antagonist, but he wasn't a villain. you know? So, and actually ended up being very important to the resolution of things in that movie. So now, in terms of my own favorite moments from Black Panther, I got to tell you, I mean,
can I just disagree that he was a villain? He was absolutely a villain.
You can disagree. In fact, I encourage it.
You know, murdered people.
Who did he murder?
His girlfriend.
No, I said
true.
I said Winston Duke. I was talking about M'Baku.
Duke. Oh, I thought you said Killmonger.
Sorry. Oh no. Killmonger was a villain. Now, he wasn't entirely wrong, but he was, I thought Michael B. Jordan damn near stole that movie. I mean, he gave a nuanced performance. Killmonger was a very complex character, and that was it was just really something. But my first favorite moment from that movie was during the challenge against M'Baku, and he had grabbed up. In fact, I think this is the music from it here. But M'Baku had grabbed up T'Challa, and he was squeezing him in this grip, and there they are, Warrior Falls, and T'Challa looks over and he sees his mom, and his mom is like, "Show them who you are." And my boy went off. He started whooping dude's ass. I was like, yeah. So, and just sitting here, I'm hyped thinking about that moment in the movie. I mean, so, and there were a number of moments like that. I loved the scene in Korea. And that's something else about Marvel's movies, because, they take you to different locales, and whether it's Germany or Nigeria or Korea or whatever, it's beautiful the way that they make their movies. And I was profoundly moved by this. Also, I had a tear in my eye at the end of that movie, where they go back to Oakland. Sunset. And the one little boy, is like, the rest of them are running over to the spaceship, but the one boy sees, he's like, "Who are you?" And I was like, "That's the Black Panther, man." But hey, before we do anything else, we're going to play, because we only got two more clips from this interview, and I got about 9 minutes left in the show. So we are going to play another clip. This is Nate Moore talking about the large number of African Americans who were behind the camera on Black Panther. Let's take a listen.
Credit to Ryan, who said, "We have to find people. This crew should be as diverse as our cast is. And I know these people, and we can go find the Ruth Carters of the world, and we're so lucky that she came to us." But I do think it's important. I do think there's an extra energy when you know you're representing something that's not represented, and it's part of your culture. When you have to work the hour 15, hour 16 over the Christmas break, you do it because you care about it. And I think that energy from all of us trickled out to the entire crew, to where everybody took this ball and said, "This is really special. Let's pour that extra bit of energy into it." But it all starts from a director who gives that energy off and who empowers people to take chances and to go for wild swings, because he knew, like I think we all knew, you don't get a lot of swings at the plate for a movie like this. Mm-hmm. So it has to be excellent.
Yeah, there you go.
Because if it's not, then it can become a sign of something of to not do. Mm-hmm. And we knew if it could be excellent, it could be a sign of something to try and replicate. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, there's more stories like these. And that's I think, if we can win, that's how we can win.
Now, that is a very interesting point on the part of executive producer Nate Moore. And I'm interested in the few minutes that we have left, I'm interested in getting each of your opinions about the potential impact that a movie like Black Panther has on black film, on the film industry. I mean, we're already seeing a lot of this in terms of the movie going public, because black people have embraced this movie. I mean, I'm seeing pictures on social media. Folks are breaking out the kente cloth, and they're going out and they're going to the movies. I mean, people, your grandma, who might never have seen a Marvel movie ever, is going to see Black Panther. What do we think about that, Shireen?
Oh, I'm encouraged by it, and because I hope that this is the one time that we can keep the wave going, that we can keep this wave of representation that is across the diaspora and ranges all kinds of socioeconomic levels. I hope that we can maintain that and build upon it, because Ryan Coogler said something about realizing that Africa is a representation of humanity, and that we forget that in America because it's not what we see. And it is of dire importance that our humanity, people of color, LGBTQ people, disabled people, that all of the marginalized people, that our humanity be fully recognized. And art is how we do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay. All right. Brian?
I'm in full agreement. But not just here in America. I don't know if you've seen the video of Lupita's home country and how they embraced it, and they're rejoicing and they're treating it like a new celebration, because again, you know, most of I've seen some African movies and you know they depict it as you know what they you know normally see in their real world, but something of this grand nature, I think there's something that they feel like, okay, we're really being represented in a more positive light. Even though it's in a fictional sense, but it's inspiring, which I give it. But let's be real, people. This is not 1999, and we're, you know, the 1990s where, you know, hey, we got to go African Bumbada and, you know, let's get back to the motherland all the time. But it's a good idea. It's fun. It's great to see people, you know, feeling their Wakandan and Zamunda, you know, gear and, you know, and enjoying a really, really good movie.
Brandon, what do you think?
I'll basically just touch, you know, just briefly on what everyone has said. But one thing that comes to mind immediately is that video that went viral with the school of kids that, you know, had an opportunity to see Black Panther. And just that idea of, you know, for, you know, kids that are, you know, looking up to figures that look like them. And how important that that is across the board. Because, I mean, I have friends, family from all walks of life that are not moviegoers in any sense of the word. But because of this film, you know, they're inspired to, you know, show support and to go see it. So,
you know, every time I'm feeling overwhelmed in my day, I watch the video of those kids.
Yeah, them dancing, yeah.
Of them dancing and their joy at going to see Black Panther, and it picks me right up every time.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. Okay, so our final clip from the Nate Moore and Ruth E. Carter interview, each one of them talking about what it is they hope audiences take away from this exciting and inspirational film.
Specific to those audiences, I hope they see images of themselves that are positive they don't get to see. And a lot of different kinds of images, because sometimes also we get to see one image of Will Smith kicking somebody's butt, and you're like, I guess that's maybe what I can do. But what I think is great about this film is you get to see a king, you get to see his mother, a very strong female character, you get to see a sister, the smartest person in Wakanda. You get to see M'Baku, who's a really interesting character because he does, even though he is antagonistic towards T'Challa, have a sense of honor and have a sense of pride. You get to see all these different black faces that are doing different things rather than just one black face that gets to be a cool cop or something like that. So I want kids to be inspired by the breadth of what they can be. And if they take that away, I think that'd be great.
And I want people to just enjoy themselves and leave with a sense of they went on a ride, they went on a fantasy, and it took place in Africa, mm-hmm. and that, you know, they could be proud of it. You know, that's what I hope.
Yeah, I tell you what, it was really exciting to be able to talk to people who were so intimately involved in the making of this particular film that is going to, I mean, it's already reverberating. I mean, just the fact that you got haters coming out and people trying to, you know, they're like, oh, why does it have to be the Black Panther? Why can't he be the Human Panther or just the Panther, you know? And I mean, you know, some of this other madness that that people seem to be talking about. But in the last few minutes that we have, I love for the people who come on the show to be able to just talk about themselves and what they're doing. So, hey, Brandon, if anybody is interested in finding out more about you and what you're into, where can they check out Brandon Troy?
They can check me out on Movers and Shakers Unlimited. We're on Cox Cable, channels 9, 11, 74, and 77. We also have a digital face with Movers and Shakers Unlimited online. So Twitter, Move and Shake, UNLTD, Facebook, Instagram, the whole nine. We have some big events coming up that I can't get into like details about, but just suffice to say that if you're going to be at any of your local cons in the coming months, we will have a major presence there.
There you go. Suffice to say. All right, Shireen, if now you mentioned Geek Girl Riot a little bit earlier, but just please reiterate for our audience, where can people find Geek Girl Riot and Shireen Nicole?
Geek Girl Riot is on Adobe Radio every Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. You can also find it podcast the next day on Adobe.com.
All right. And Brian, you are into all sorts of stuff. You know, real quick, how can people find out more about Brian Lyles and what you're into now?
Right now, I'm the producer of two shows on Rip Radio Network called Fashion Victuals and Eye Candy. We're right now on hiatus until April. We'll let you know more about that. I'm also working on the web series Archives of the Heart. You can learn more about that on archivesoftheheart.com. We're working on season two right now. And also, who knows what else I'll be doing. I'll be probably on the morning show sometime soon, but we'll see about that.
There you go. All right, and of course, Fantastic Forum is also a television show in the Arlington area. You can check that out at 8 p.m. tonight on Comcast Channel 69, Verizon Fios Channel 38. We appreciate you tuning in. You can always visit our website at fantasticforum.tv. Got a lot more exciting stuff there, which you can find out all about. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. Thank you so much for tuning in. Come back next week, same bat time, same bat station.